Welcome back to another episode of the Strength and Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Strength and Speed owner, and Mud Gear Handlebar Race Pro, Evan Preparis. No guests with me. I'm doing a solo episode today. Before we get to that, though, a quick word from this episode's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by The Feed. The Feed is an all-in-one supplement nutrition superstore focused on endurance and the sports we like here. Obstacle course racing, long distance running, you do general fitness stuff. A lot of great stuff on there, protein powders, pre-workouts, etc. I'm going to drop a link down below. Please click through it. Helps us get it sponsors for this podcast and helps fund the podcast and all the good things that allow the podcast to keep going. So that's The Feed. They even have Hammer Nutrition, which, as you know, if you've listened to my podcast for a while, I'm a longtime fan of. Best endurance supplements on the market, I believe. But they do have some gaps in their game for like complete holistic nutrition. And two of the things I've started ordering from The Feed are, one, casein protein. It's a slow digesting protein that allows you to take it before you go to bed and allows you to build muscle while you sleep. And the other one is like kind of a stronger pre-workout. Hammer Nutrition does have pre-workout products, but it's not really designed for lifting. It's more for running. So the caffeine content is really low. I think it's like 20 milligrams or something in their pre-workout. So if you want a little stronger pre-workout, you can head over to The Feed. Again, I'm going to drop that link down below. Please check it out. All right, so what's this episode about? This episode is called Faith, Fighting, and Fitness. So earlier this year, or last year, I guess, I changed the Strength and Speed website because we switched hosts, and I broke the website into three sections, fitness, fighting, and faith. So I kind of wanted to explore a little bit about each of those topics and kind of how things have changed and where things are going. So we'll start off with the fitness one. Obviously, I think all of my listeners, if not I think all my listeners, are all obstacle course racing people, right? So the fitness, it's still obstacle course racing focused as my primary sport. You know, that's where I have built all my success. That's where all my books so far are focused on, obstacle course racing. So obstacle course racing will still be the focus of the fitness part. For those who don't know what obstacle course racing is, very brief explanation. It's a kind of umbrella term, covers the whole sport, just like mixed martial arts covers the entire sport. And then within each sport, there are specific brands, right? So there's, if we look at fighting, like UFC is a brand of mixed martial arts, and bare knuckle fighting is another brand, and ONE Championship, stuff like that. Just like obstacle course racing, you have Tough Mudder, Spartan, and then there's a lot of local brands. Most of the other major brands in obstacle course racing have closed, right? Rugged Maniac went out of business. Bone Frog, I'm pretty sure, is gone and not coming back. Battle Frog went out of business. Atlas Race went out of business. Superhero Scramble, just to name a few. But the small local OCR scene is still thriving. Still a lot of great brands there. KC Timber Challenge, Mythic Race, Midwest OCR, one of the new ones this year, brought to you by Race Ready Obstacles, which I unfortunately will miss, but looks like one of the best events of the year. Hazelwood OCR, Phoenix Race OCR, and all their kind of the sub-brands like Murder Creek Mud Run. Yeah, pretty self-explanatory for those of you who know obstacle course racing. It's a fixed course. You run from point A to point B. It could be anywhere between 100 meters and 24 hours. You climb over things. You swing on monkey bars. You do man-made obstacles. You do natural obstacles. It's generally a fixed path, and whoever gets the finish line the fastest with completing all the obstacles, or in some races, doing the obstacles and associated penalties if you fail, wins the race. I'm not going to dive too much deeper into that. I'm pretty sure if you're listening to this podcast, you already know what obstacle course racing is. It's the other two kind of pillars of the website that I'm going to be focusing more on. You know, when we talk obstacle course racing, I consider things like Ninja Warrior an obstacle course race, right? They've just reduced the running down to zero. I don't consider things like Barclays Marathons, you know, the 125-ish mile multi-lap event in the middle of Tennessee that requires land navigation, and there's no fixed maps. I don't consider that an obstacle course race, despite the fact that you're climbing over things and the terrain is really bad, creating a significant obstacle, and you have to land navigate. The big issue with that is, again, land navigation. When I take away a fixed course, to me that dives into the sport of either orienteering or adventure racing, so I consider those different brands. I wouldn't even consider Barclays an ultramarathon. I consider that orienteering primarily. It is an ultra-orienteering race, in my opinion. Other events like Death Race, again, I would not consider those obstacle course races, or Hurricane Heat. Things where, again, there's not a fixed course, there's not a fixed series of obstacles. You're not racing necessarily against the clock. So Ninja War, yes. Spartan Rest, yes. Tough Mudder, yes. All the local brands we know, yes. Death Race, Hurricane Heat, GORUCK series of events, GORUCK selection, all that stuff, I would say no. I'd put those in a different series of sports, which I've talked about before, and I've got an article on way back in Mudrun Guide called Are Events Like Death Race Obstacle Course Races? And I say no. I would flip within the category of assessment and selection events, so what I call ACE. Still get a lot of crossover between both of those sports, and there's even crossover on the adventure racing side. If everyone remembers when Eco Challenge restarted for that 1 year, and it was on TV, or was that Primal Quest? Eco Challenge, I'm pretty sure. Anyway, athletes like Aria Coble and Ryan Atkins, Lindsey Webster, and stuff crossed over into adventure racing, right? Because they're just freaks of fitness, and they are capable of performing at a high level in whatever sport they choose to compete in. But those are adventure races, not obstacle course races. Going forward, again, we'll still be focusing on obstacle course racing. That's where I built the brand on. Strength and Speed actually started as a primarily just like a generic fitness brand, focusing mostly on bodybuilding and endurance running. But within about a year, I found obstacle course racing and the brand shifted pretty early. So it's primarily obstacle course racing focused and will continue to be that for the foreseeable future. I am approaching Podium 100, which is an embarrassing amount of podiums. It's so many that when I tell people, again, I'm like, this is kind of embarrassing. Like, I should have been doing something else with my life, time and effort and energy. But it is a major milestone for me, so I should hit that by the end of May, 100-plus podiums there. And at that point, I will not retire, but I will go into, I'm going to call it semi-retirement. So I'm going to stop traveling to, like, the major races. Major for me was basically toughest and world's toughest. I'm going to start basically only doing stuff within like kind of a 4-hour driving ring of wherever I'm located. So whether that be Kansas City for the next couple months or Boston for the 4 years after that, that's my plan moving forward. So you'll still see me, maybe not in the same format and frequency as before, but I'll still be around. Still planning on going to World's Toughest Mudder as of now. I'll probably go as media though, not as an athlete. Small chance I could be convinced to do a team relay, but definitely not doing individual. Just for the last, let's say, 2 years, I kept doing endurance races and, like, not really enjoying myself, but I just kind of pushed through it and was like, it was a fluke, it was a one-off. And after doing that for about 2 years, I'm like, maybe I don't enjoy this as much as I used to. So just different priorities, different focuses, and I can feel my fitness slipping away from where it used to be. I think fitness is a bell-shaped curve. I think I am at the top side of the back end of the top side of the bell-shaped curve, and not really interested in sliding down all the way to the bottom. All right, so that's the fitness part. Let's jump into the fighting part. So if anyone hasn't explored the website, teamstrengthspeed.com, please check it out. There's now a fighting subsection. One of the big things within the fighting subsection, there's another podcast listed there. So obviously we have the Strength and Speed podcast, but there's another podcast called Tiga Tactics Podcast. I've had the founders of Tiga Tactics on the podcast once each before, Dr. Conrad Bowie and Patrick Vuong. I really like their brand. I think it's really it's simple. It's effective. Anyone can learn it. They have online courses, so you can learn it from the comfort of your own home. I highly encourage everyone to take it, even experienced martial artists. I think as people who do martial arts a lot, sometimes have so much information, they don't know what to teach people, and they don't know what's like really useful for street stuff and real-life violent encounters. Anyway, we started a podcast with them, just like Strength and Speed. It comes out twice a month. Tiga Tactics Podcast. There's links over on the fighting section of our website, also on all major podcast platforms. So please go check that out. We talk. It's not like we just list like, "All right, here's how to do a spinning back kick. Here's how to do a hook kick." It's focused mostly on the mindset, because as we know from endurance sports, fighting is very similar, where there's a large mindset component. Obviously, your skill set component is important, but its mindset is so important, and it's often undervalued. You know, people get attacked on the streets, and there are times when they successfully defend themselves with absolutely no training, no martial arts background. And the question is, how do they do it? And the answer is mindset. All right, so we see mindset at play in real world attacks. For those of you who do endurance sports, obstacle course racing, you probably know already the importance of mindset. Going into a training run, having a stronger mindset, or going into a race and having a strong mindset, you'll find you can perform better on race day and even get through obstacles. You know, if I feel like if I try to convince myself that I can absolutely get through an obstacle I'm stuck at, And a lot of times I'll use the observer effect, so I'll have someone videotape me. So there's it's a forcing function because I know we're gonna have video proof of whatever happens. It makes my mindset stronger, which makes my skill set stronger, which increases my probability for success. So that's one of the things in the fighting subsection. There's also some other kind of shout outs to some of the athletes we have who currently do obstacle course racing or have done obstacle course racing, kind of have switched over or have a martial arts background and switched over. So you'll see some of their pictures on there and some of their qualifications and what they've done. Also working on 3 books. So the first 2 are about 90%+ done. And the third one I have a couple pages. First one will be out this summer. It is the Tiga Tactics, Essentially Runner's Guide to Self-Defense. That's not the actual name of the book. It will likely be something called Run If You Can, Destroy If You Must, or might just be Run If You Can. Still haven't figured out the exact title yet. But essentially, it's blending my 2 worlds of fitness and fighting. So taking a lot of the lessons learned, primarily from the Tiga Tactics brand, as well as some other resources I've read and picked up, and sharing that knowledge with runners who sometimes, due to work, have to run at night, or sometimes, you know, if you're more of an endurance guy. I know myself, I often have trouble finding training partners because most people don't want to run 8+ miles, and most of my training runs are in the 8 or higher mile range. And they're whenever I can fit them in. I've got a family, so I don't have time to necessarily wait for other people to be ready. I squeeze them in when I can. So I'm excited about that book. Again, that'll come out this summer. You'll also see a separate logo, not the Strength and Speed barbell wings on the fighting subsection. Essentially, it's a black Greek shield with a white Greek key going around the border, and then the Omega symbol in the middle. That logo is my symbol that's like my self-defense, self-protection brand logo. So I call it Pamashan. Pamashan is essentially the old word for combatives in ancient Greece. Right, so like 300, more than that, BC, right, 300+ BC, there was, the Greeks had combat sports. They had pancration, which essentially is modern MMA, very similar to that. That's the closest equivalent. They had boxing, and they had wrestling. For the military, they also had something called hoplomachia. So hoplomachia essentially is weapons combat. And then Pamashan was essentially a combination of pancration, so fighting, grappling, joint manipulation / choking, and hoplomachia, which essentially was weapons work, and that kind of combines into Pamashan, or the modern term for it would be combatives. So my next book after the Tiga Tactics Self-Protection or Self-Defense Runner's Guide there is going to be like the Combatives Bible, Pamashan Bible. Again, I haven't quite figured out the name. Most of the book is done. I compare it to building a house. Right, so everyone's house looks different, different size bedrooms, different size bathrooms, different size family rooms, or different size basement, maybe there's no basement, whatever. You know, if you're a martial artist or you're into learning about that stuff, I think you should be capable in every range of combat, everything from shooting to impact weapons to kicking through punching and trapping, elbow range, down to standing grappling and then grappling on the ground. There's a lot of martial artists who will just focus on one. They'll be like, I just do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I literally don't know how to throw a punch. Or there's a lot of stand-up fighters who will not know any ground game, despite some of the lessons we've learned from UFC, you know, starting in the 90s. So the concept of the book is, here's how to learn a little bit about each range and some resources for where to start and, like, different levels. So, you know, here's like something that'll take a weekend and give you a little bit of training in that range. Here's something that will take a year, and here's something that will take 3 years, and here's something that will take 5 years, right? So it's giving you kind of what I call the blueprint for building your martial arts house and some suggestions on where to start, what resources to look at, some basic information about, you know, how to throw punches and stuff like that. So a lot of concepts based, a lot of principles based, a lot of mindset-based, not necessarily a book that lists a whole bunch of techniques, although we do talk a little bit about techniques, just to make sure you understand some of the basics. And if you read some of the technique parts and you're like, well, none of this, I didn't know this, then you probably need to help and focus on that range. Because, again, it's a book I wish I had when I started training more seriously in martial arts. And if I would have had that book, it would have helped guide me on my path. And some of the things that I've done that, not necessarily a waste of money, but didn't, you know, I they weren't the best use of time, I could have learned ahead of time. And it also covers some of the crazy martial arts myths you see of, you know, chi blasts and no touch knockouts and iron palm training where you like strengthen your forearms and fists and stuff like that to break bricks and all sorts of stuff like that. So it's kind of like a once over the world of martial arts. Explains a little bit about it. If you're interested in pursuing any of that stuff, the Combatives Bible, Pumation Bible, again, not too sure what I'm going to call it, that'll be a great resource for you. If you also explore that section of the website, or there's another kind of branch off that has some of my background, you'll see some of the arts I've trained in and some of the combative systems I've trained in and been certified in. So if anyone's interested in some of that stuff, I do offer essentially online private Zoom classes. Again, you do have to pay for those, but it's just a matter of I don't have time to give a lot of that stuff out for free and not provide some sort of, you know, positive feedback mechanism for me besides just helping. So I recently got certified in associate instructor for Tiga Tactics. Another bladed system. I got certified in is Medusa Edge Weapon System. It's a prison-based system. If you listen to the Jason Schultz podcast, I'm an instructor for that. In the process of getting certified for Western Piper Methods, that's a criminal-based system based out of South Africa. I hold certifications in Kali, both through Dynamic Fighting Arts and then through a lot of in-person training at Elite Academy of Martial Arts in Junction City. Black belt in karate, blue belt in jiu-jitsu. Studied a lot of other blade systems that I don't necessarily have certifications on, like Libre Fighting Systems. I've completed level 2 of Dynamis Alliance, another bladed system. Then Master Army Combative Certified. And obviously all my military background, Special Forces Ranger, Special Forces Urban Advanced Combat Course. Special Forces Advanced Urban Combat Course. There we go. Anyway, long story short, I know a thing or two. I have a bit of experience in every range. Some of them I have a lot of experience, some of them I have a little experience, but I've got experience in every range, which I think is important. Even if you want to specialize in something, right? Like like I said, I really like bladed arts, and even if you want to specialize in that, if you don't understand basics of grappling, you might get the weapon taken away from you, right? So it's a lot of it's about control, a lot of it's about mindset, right? Because if you're in a self-defense situation, decide to pull a knife on someone, and there's not a viable threat, then you have essentially escalated the situation. Now you are the bad guy, despite how the situation appeared to be playing out at first. Anyway, I can teach multiple things, but if anyone is specifically interested in some of the more combative bladed arts, Medusa, Western Piper Methods, etc., I do teach that stuff, Antigua Tactics, I teach that stuff online for Zoom. I've had a couple students go through and get, or one student so far for Medusa go through and get certified. I had a couple more lined up if anyone's interested. Those systems, they're pretty simple, and they've kind of been streamlined. So they some of them take like an hour or two to learn the basics of the system. And then if you want to get tested as an instructor, you know, you can go that route. Or if you just want to learn the system, you can do that too. If anyone's interested, again, feel free to reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram or shoot me a message to the website, whatever method you want to reach out. Which leads into my third book. My third book will be bladed arts focused. Again, kind of a book I'm writing to myself from a couple of years ago, just a how to navigate and which systems are good for what and why, you know, systems develop that way. So that'll be my third book. That's one's, again, I do release one a year essentially, so that probably won't come out till 2026. Takes a while to read, proofread, edit, produce, publish, all that stuff takes a hot minute. I can teach the striking stuff and the grappling stuff. It just doesn't, I don't think it translates as well over Zoom as some of the bladed stuff. And honestly, if you're really interested in learning striking or grappling arts, your best bet is to find a local gym because, especially for grappling, you need that like human to human contact and you need a lot of reps in person and pressure testing to get good and get functional at it. But I can't teach all that stuff. Anyway, reach out to me if you're interested in that, and we can get something set up, or if you have further questions. All right, so that is the faith portion. I'm sorry, that is the fitness portion. That is the fighting portion. Moving on to the faith portion. If you've been following my social media, Ultra OCR Man, which is my Facebook, you can find me at facebook.com, Ultra OCR Man, or Instagram.com/Ultra OCR Man, or YouTube, patreon.com/@ultraocrman or www.ultraocrman.com, which actually just leads you to the Strength and Speed website. If you follow all that, you may have seen an announcement from a couple weeks ago. News I've known for about 10 months or so, but didn't announce it until recently. So I retire from the military this summer, and I moved to Boston. And the reason I'm moving to Boston is I'm going to seminary for Hellenic College of Holy Cross to get a master's in divinity. It is a 4-year program. I'll learn Greek, learn all the nuances of being a Orthodox priest, and in 4 years I'll graduate, and then plus a couple of months or a year or so after that, get ordained as an Orthodox priest. I'll probably jump into it on a different episode, you know, why I chose to go that route. Long story short, I believe that as someone in the military, I had a higher sense of purpose in the military. I don't think I could take a job that does not have a higher sense of purpose. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It's just me personally. And this is the route I choose or choosing, whatever you want to say, that I think can help people and scratch that itch. And I think the way my parents have raised me, the way my life has played out, the, you know, as a member of the a retired member of the military, I'll have a steady financial paycheck. All that stuff sets me up well where I can do something that I love, that I think is important, and I think that can help others and be fulfilling. Being in the Midwest, there's not a lot of Orthodox Christian. And when I say Orthodox, that is Orthodox Christianity, Eastern Orthodox. Sometimes you hear Greek Orthodox, you hear Russian Orthodox, you hear Orthodox Church of America. So I wanted to give a quick, like, what is Orthodox Christianity 101? Again, I'm not here on this podcast trying to convert you. I'm simply trying to inform you. I've studied a ton of religions. When I was in my time in Iraq, I spent a lot of time studying Islam. Again, not because I wanted to convert to Islam or be a Muslim. I just wanted to understand the culture and why they believed what they believed and some of the differences. All right, so here's a quick rundown of what is Orthodox Christianity. All right, so let's jump back in time. This is going to be a dirty, quick and dirty history lesson. We jump back in time. I'm not going to go through all Old Testament stuff, but long story short, Old Testament prophesizes the arrival of a Messiah, a Savior. Jesus shows up around 0 AD, plus or minus 4. Generally, like they think they get 0 to 4 time frame there. Lives his life, does miracles, 12 apostles, gets crucified, rises from the dead, meets with the 12 apostles. There's Pentecost, imbues them with the Holy Spirit, and they start preaching the word. And from there, the church forms. And when I say the church, I mean the early followers of Christ. So for the first, you know, couple decades following Christ's resurrection and ascension into heaven, there's not much written down, right? It's because Christ, when he left, he's like, I'm coming back soon. And they're like, well, I guess don't need to write anything down. Long story later, towards the end of the first century, parts of the Bible start being written in sections by different people. Those sections are eventually transcribed and copied. Kind of final canon of the Bible established a couple hundred years later, basically in the 300s. Over that 300-year period, a bunch of the early leaders and followers of the church are frequently brutally murdered and persecuted for their beliefs. Constantine legalizes Christianity, or essentially allows Christians to move on without being persecuted, and from there, Christianity starts to spread much wider. So the church is essentially one church from Jesus all the way through 1054, we'd say. And during 1054, there's something called the Great Schism that happens, right? So the Orthodox Church, or the church, because there's only one church, there's no denominations at that point. There's Rome, there's Alexandria, Antioch, Constantinople, and Jerusalem. So that's kind of like the five archbishops that are kind of leading the church. The Archbishop of Rome essentially gets in an argument with the other four. Long story short, he excommunicates the other four. So he essentially kicks the other four out of the church. The other four are like, you can't kick us out. We are the church. You're the only breakaway. So after 1054, the church splits, and now you have the Roman Archbishop, now sometimes called the Pope now, or now called the Pope. And then you've got the other four as the rest of the church. Roman Church starts calling themselves the Catholic or meaning Universal Church. The other four just call themselves the church until they eventually have to come up with a name because people are like, well, who are you? And it's like, well, I'm the church. And it's like, well, they're the church. It's like, no, I'm the... fine, we'll just come up with a separate name. They start calling them the Orthodox Church, meaning the true church. Right, so if you're confused, feel free to Google timeline of church history, and you'll see kind of what that looks like. Essentially, it's one tree trunk coming out of the time of Jesus, and then splits at 1054 into Catholic Orthodox. And then from there, Orthodox generally stays as a single branch and maintains that way forward. Catholic tends to stay as a single branch until the Protestant Reformation, and then it basically splinters and explodes into all the different denominations we have today. So when you look at a lot of the Protestant critiques of the church, they are typically of the Catholic Church. And so a lot of times they'll say something, the Catholic Church will have to respond to it, and then they will take opposing viewpoints. And when they, if you ask the Orthodox view of that viewpoint, they're like, well, neither of you are right. It's somewhere in the middle. Easiest way to describe a lot of the beliefs of the Orthodox Church, a lot of times I just compare it to Catholicism, because that's what seems to be easiest, because that's what most people tend to know, and even like Protestants or Baptists tend to know Catholicism pretty well, because they're a reaction to some of the Catholic policies. And again, I'm glossing over a ton of information here, just trying to highlight a couple of major differences so people have an understanding of what it is. So Orthodox Church, obviously priests can be married as long as you are married before you are ordained. So I'm not going to divorce my wife. That's a big difference compared to the Catholic Church. Orthodox does confirmation, baptism, and communion all at 6 months. A belief there is because I don't hold food back from my child because it's necessary for their growth. The same concept is I don't hold spiritual food, spiritual nourishment back from my child. So that's why we do it early at 6 months. We don't wait for the age of reason where you decide that you want to be a follower. Essentially, as a parent, as an adult, I decide for you. And then as you grow up, you have to maintain that relationship. Don't believe in once saved, always saved. Right, your relationship with God, with Jesus, is part of a ongoing relationship. So it's a constant communication type thing. I don't just say it once and that's it. So easiest way to compare that to is marriage. You get married and you are married, but then if you start misbehaving, cheating on your spouse, etc., start behaving badly, that marriage falls apart. Right. So just like your relationship with God, it's a back and forth relationship. If you go into an Orthodox church, you'll see a lot of pictures of other saints. So not, you'll see Jesus, obviously. You'll see the Virgin Mary. Sometimes called the Theotokos, the God-bearer. But you also see a lot of other pictures of Christians. And we're not worshiping the Christians, the other Christians. I'm not worshiping the Virgin Mary. They call it venerating. I am paying my respects to them. You know, without the early church Christians who sacrificed, usually pretty violently, being boiled, ripped apart by lions, put on spiked wheels and tortured, being thrown into lie pits to dissolve their skin, all sorts of crazy stuff. Without their sacrifices, the church would not exist. So we pay respects to them. We have pictures of them. We believe they're alive in Christ, so their pictures are up on the wall. You'll see Orthodox Christians, when they walk into a church, a lot of times they'll kiss those pictures. Again, I'm not worshiping the piece of wood that the painting is drawn on. Simply paying respects. It's just as if you had a picture of a loved one, grandparent or a parent that might have passed away, and you might hug the picture, you might kiss the picture, you'll still keep pictures of that up on the wall. Same concept, except these people or early Christians who I've never physically met in person, but we still pay respect to them, we still show our appreciation for them. Occasionally you hear people ask, like, pray to the Virgin Mary, or ask for the prayers of other saints. Again, I'm not, you're still praying to God, still praying to Jesus. But you are, it's called intercessory prayer. So just as most modern Christians would say to someone, hey, would you mind praying for me? Or I'm having a hard time, can you pray for me? It's the same concept, except those people are, again, I've never met them in person. They died hundreds, sometimes thousands of years ago. I'm asking for their prayers just as I would ask for one of my friends to pray for me if I'm having a hard time. The church is liturgical. So there's a set series of things you say and things you do throughout the service. It is the same worldwide. So whether I'm in a church in Greece or I'm in a church in America, the passages that are reading are being read, the format of the church, the organization of how things are going is exactly the same. And all these rules and the divine liturgy we use is the divine liturgy of St. John Chrysostom. It's from like 500 AD, right? So that hasn't changed in 1500 years. The only part that will vary from church to church is the sermon. So for the priests, anywhere between typically 3 to 20 minutes, usually closer to around 10, in the service we'll, you know, I'm going to use the term freestyle, we'll talk about typically whatever the Bible passage read that day and kind of share some of his thoughts and how it applies to modern day life and or him personally or you personally and kind of shares that message. But the rest of it's very scripted. You read passages from the Bible. The entire Divine Liturgy is basically reformatted Bible quotes repeated, usually tend to repeat things in groups of 3. I go to a Greek Orthodox Church. There you'll see sometimes Russian Orthodox Church. Russian Orthodox Church, I think in America, has completely rebranded itself as the Orthodox Church of America. That's not a new rebranding. That's years ago. But as the church spread from Jerusalem out, when they went into other countries, they adopted some of the language and customs of those countries. So the Russian Orthodox Church and the Greek Orthodox Church, basically they believe the same thing, except one is primarily uses Russian language in their liturgy, and the other one primarily uses Greek in their liturgy. If you're on the East Coast, like where I grew up, lots of the services were in high percentages of Greek. In the Midwest, where there's a lot more converts, there tends to be a lot more English. So if you go to a Greek church, you don't have to be ethnically Greek. Most of the people that go to my church in Kansas City are not ethnically Greek. When you go to that church, it will primarily be in English. There'll be a couple of phrases that are in Greek, and usually those phrases are repeated, so you kind of get used to them, and you pick it up pretty quickly as far as what those phrases mean and what they and how to say them. There's no statues in a Greek church. Generally belief that it is too easy to fall into idolatry due to statues. And all this stuff typically has a Bible verse that's linked to why we believe that way. The golden calf is kind of why there's no statues, if you're familiar with that story from the Old Testament. We do have pictures in the church. I know some modern denominations are like, well, there's no pictures because God said no graven images. He also said no graven images. And then like a couple pages later, he's like, now build the Ark of the Covenant, which has graven images on it, right? So the reason that has changed since the arrival of Jesus is Jesus showed up in person, so we know what he looks like. And since we know what he looks like, it's now okay to reproduce images of him in the church. This was also important because the early Christians and the early prior to like 1800, the literacy rate was like less than 20%. So if you're saying the only way to learn is directly from the Bible, for about 1800 years, no one was learning anything because most of the people couldn't read. So there's a big thing called tradition. They say we believe in tradition as well as the teachings of the Bible. And the better way to say the word tradition is holy teachings, right? So it's things that have been passed down from generation to generation. And I used to work with a guy who's I think he was Baptist. So we used to get into religious discussions, and he used to be like, well, we don't believe in tradition. I just believe in what's in the Bible. So I used to like to argue with him and be like, you know, friendly argument, just more of a discussion. And I'd say, well, you do believe in tradition. You just don't realize it's a tradition because you've believed in it for so long. So examples are obviously what Christ looks like. Again, that is primarily through iconography and through tradition, through teaching. There's no physical description of him in the Bible, but when you look at churches all across the world, he tends to look the same generally. Sometimes in America, he looks a little whiter than he should be. If you look in like the Orthodox Church, he is a fairly dark-skinned person because in the Middle East, people tend to have darker skin there. You know, the fact that he has a beard, the fact that he's not overweight or underweight, he's just kind of more of like a normal-looking body type, the color of his hair. The use of the cross as a Christian symbol, right, established by Constantine in the 300s. The word Trinity is never in the Bible. The first time we see it used in written text that I'm tracking is 181, and then backed by confirmations from the early church fathers like Irenaeus. The establishment of Christmas, you know, the date for that, that's holy tradition. You know, what books are in the Bible? Again, that was not set in stone in 100 AD. It didn't happen until 300 AD, right? So the first couple hundred years, you're relying off word of mouth and people passing things forward. Even the term, even like the order of the books in the Bible, again, that's holy tradition established by, you know, the early councils, like Council of Nicaea. I could go on. That's just kind of a quick overview. Don't want to drag this on too long. I will bring on Father Dino. He's the guy that does the intro and outro music for the podcast. And we can talk. We'll probably talk more Christianity and also music based stuff. Again, mastering complex skills and kind of how it applies to obstacle course racing, and then talk a little bit more about Christianity. So I'm recording this on Monday, April 29th. If anyone wants to see what an Orthodox church looks like, this weekend is actually the perfect opportunity. So 11 p.m. It's a late night service on Saturday, May 3rd, is called Greek Easter. It is Orthodox Easter, or Pascha, or Passover. Reason it's on a different date is that we use the old Jewish calendar to help calculate the date of Easter, as opposed to the more modern calendar. So Easter for Orthodox Christians shifts every year. Sometimes it's on the same day as Catholic or Western Easter. Sometimes it's off by a week. Sometimes it's off, like this case, it's like 6 weeks, 5 weeks. So it's almost, there's like a full month separating it. Anyway, if you find any Orthodox Church, Greek Orthodox, Orthodox Church of America, this Saturday, May 3rd at 11 p.m., go to that place. And it's a pretty cool spectacle to see. So it's essentially the resurrection service. People show up at 11. They go through some religious chants and prayers, and then all the lights go out in the church, and then they light a candle, and everyone's got a candle, and the candlelight spreads through the church like Christ's light spreading throughout the world. Again, even if you have no interest in being an Orthodox Christian, you have no interest in Christianity, it is a pretty cool spectacle to see. I would highly encourage checking it out. I would have gone and checked out mosques or Muslim services when I was in the Middle East, if I was allowed to, but they don't allow you to visit those. When I was in Utah, I wanted to go check out the Mormon temple, but if you're not Mormon, you're not allowed in the church. So I do think just understanding other religions, I think it would be cool to go, and this Saturday is the best time to go. And if you don't go this Saturday, you know, any Sunday at any church, you'll still be a different experience. There's a lot of incense, so there's like a very unique smell associated with Orthodox churches. They tend to be very beautiful, ornate, right? The pictures of all the saints that are up on the wall. The church I grew up in St. Paul's in Hempstead, New York, has mosaics like wall to wall. Super, super beautiful. I grew up there, so some of the beauty is lost on me because I thought every church looked like that. Not correct. And the layouts of the church tend to be the same, tend to face east, right? Because Christ is coming back from the east, according to the Bible. Most of them are laid out in the shape of a cross. Typically, the priest ends up doing a lot of talking facing the east. He's not facing the crowd, right? He's not performing for the crowd. He's praying with the crowd. So the word liturgy, divine liturgy, is like the divine work of the people. So it's more of a leading from the front, not necessarily being the focus of attention and preaching back to the audience. Orthodox priests tend to have beards. That's more of just like a cultural thing. It's not a mandatory requirement. They tend to wear vestments, so kind of more, a little more ornate robes. And there's something called iconostasis, so a wall of icons, pictures separating the altar from the crowd. And it's laid out in a very specific way. I won't go into it now, but it's got the Virgin Mary up there. It's got Jesus. It's got a couple of saints. It's got the name of the church is up there. So if you ever somehow are magically transported into a church and have no idea where you are, you can tell the name of the church by looking at the front of the church. This typically the second icon over on your left. I think that covers most of the high points. If anyone has any questions, again, more than welcome to reach out. I don't take offense to it. If you want to discuss things, I'm more than okay discussing things. I think Orthodox Christianity is the correct religion. That being said, I'm, long story short, a couple years ago, I started like doing a lot of research, being like, well, what are the chances I was born in the correct religion? And I was like, it's probably pretty low. Let me start looking into this. Studied it for a little bit, and then I was like, wait, let me back up. Let me figure out if I believe there's a sentient God. So I backed up. Is there a God? Came to the conclusion that yes. If anyone, a good book to read if you're kind of grappling with that question is The Case for a Creator by Lee Strobel. Good book. Don't agree with everything in there, but I do think it's a really strong start. Good place to start. And then I was like, well, let me think if Christianity is the correct religion. So again, Lee Strobel's got a book, The Case for Christ, also a very good book. Do agree with the overwhelming majority of the information in there. I think that's a really good book, really good place to start. It's also an audiobook if anyone wants to check it out on Audible. I also explored some other religions, right? I looked at Islam, looked at Judaism, looked at Buddhism. My logic being that if I do believe there's a God and I do believe he imparted a religion onto the people, it's probably one of the major religions, right? So I didn't go beyond like the top 5-6 religions. Because if there's a sentient God, I believe that he would have made himself known. And a lot of people are like, well, why doesn't God just appear in the sky and talk to us and then everyone would believe? So he did do that. He showed up on earth as Christ 2,000 years ago and performed miracles for several years and transmitted the knowledge down for 2,000 years without change, right? You know, we look at today's politicians, and they can't make it a term. They can't make it a couple months without saying something that's contradictory and without saying something that doesn't, when you look back a decade or two, like if we look back at any of the presidents we've had, if you look at some of their early policies as politicians and some of the things they said, you're like, I can't believe this dude said this stuff. He'd be canceled today. He wouldn't make it. The information that Christ passed to his apostles has held true for 2,000 plus years, which I think says something significant. And the number of parallels between the number of links between the Old Testament and New Testament, I think backs up the prophecies as far as things coming true in the future. The number of copies of the Bible and the number of historical facts that have been proven true by the Bible, even basic stuff like the, you know, book of Genesis and the, you know, for a while people did not necessarily believe that, people thought the universe always existed, but now we think the Big Bang happened and the universe started from a single point, which essentially mirrors the start of it in the book of Genesis. I feel like a lot of people get hung up with like the 7 days. Well, it says the earth was created in 7 days. Yeah, later in the Bible, it also says a day in the life of God is like 1,000 years. And they don't literally mean 1,000 years. It just means it's a really long section of time. So I think when we start getting into the age of the earth and stuff like that, people start getting held up on things that don't necessarily, I'm gonna say they don't matter, but they can be explained, and the point of the story is still factual. Anyway, came to the conclusion that Christianity was the correct religion, and then I was like, well, let me see which denomination is the correct. It's in my opinion the correct. And I was born as a Greek Orthodox, but I was open to switching, so I kind of explored. And especially during COVID, I started in the first century and started reading all the early church fathers and what they were saying and the arguments they were having. You know, the book On Heresies, where he talks about breakaway branches of Christianity in the early days. You could take passages from that book and just transport them to modern times and it would still hold true. I mean, word for word, you literally pull out a whole paragraph, drop it in, and people would be like, oh, they're talking about insert denomination X, and it would still hold true. So, long story short, I thought the early church fathers backed things up, and if you're looking for the closest what Christianity was in the immediate days following Christ, I think Orthodox Christianity has the best claim for that and the best evidence that they are the correct religion. I think one of the things that personally I've seen that separates me from other people is if you show me a better religion with better facts and evidence backing it up, I'm okay switching. I have no problem with that. I believe Orthodox Christianity is correct because I believe it's true and I believe it's factual. And I think there's a lot of evidence backing up their claims. Agree, disagree with me. Either way, that's okay. But that's kind of the conclusion I came to from the... I did a lot of my research, like I said, during COVID. It was, you know, several months where I had nothing but time. And I was... because of my job in the Army, I was still getting a paycheck. So I read books from... the first 100 years, second 100 years, third 103, you know, basically the first 6 centuries. After 1054, after the church splits and the Great Schism, I tend not to read as much because I feel like there's a chance I'm only getting a fraction of the truth, right? Like even if Orthodoxy, right, is still the correct trunk of the tree, Now we've got Breakoff Faction saying other things. So I try not to read anything after 10:54. Everything I try to read is before 10:54 for that reason. Because I want what the church said when it was completely unified. Anyway, it gave me a pretty good understanding. I'm what they call a cradle Orthodox, as in I was born into the religion. But I think I have the better understanding of a convert because I feel like cradle Orthodox tend to just, well, I just believe this because my dad and mom told me to believe it, and that's where we are. Versus most converts tend to have justification and reasons and logic for believing things. And even with all the logic and all the evidence, at some point, I compare it to like building a bridge over a large jump. At some point, the bridge ends, and you have to take that final step, that final leap of faith. And I think Orthodox Christianity has a bridge that extends all the almost all the way to the end, and the leap of faith at the very end is very small to me. It's just like I'm literally stepping forward and landing on the other side. That is Orthodox Christianity in a nutshell, a very quick once over the world. I do have some books planned for like 2026, 7, and beyond that we'll eventually get into. Obviously, as I switch to seminary, some of my like personal social media stuff might switch to more Christian-based stuff. Again, you're getting just a cross-section of who I am, minus my family stuff. I tend not to put that stuff on public, available for public consumption. But I'll still plan on racing, you know, locally in the Boston Northeast area for a couple of years. And then once I get ordained, and let's see, that'll be 2028, 29-ish. But at that point, I'll pull back completely and I'll stop, kind of disappear from the sport. And since I was just talking about fighting right before Christianity, I think one of the common questions is like, how can you be interested in fighting, and especially blade work, which is like, when you really dive into it, is messy and violent. And if you ever watch live videos, or not live videos, or CCTV videos, it is very disturbing for a lot of people. I think the ability to do violence and the ability to protect others does not necessarily have a desire to do violent things to other people. I think it allows me to be kinder, right? Because now I'm being kind from a position of strength. If anyone wants to hear more about that, check out the Tika Tactics podcast called Kind by Choice. And the ability to protect myself, protect my family, protect eventually a congregation, protect my loved ones, I think that is important. And you know, turning the other cheek and letting the ego take a hit, that's almost always the best solution in any sort of confrontation, especially social aggression situations. You know, but there is a time to where not defending others is the wrong answer. Like, I don't think anyone who, you know, back when World War II, when the Allied forces freed the concentration camps and had to do evil thing or bad things to like shoot Nazis to free the Holocaust survivors, I don't think anyone's like, well, they were doing bad things. They were definitely doing the greater good. And when we look back at church history, again, a lot of the early, not a lot, some of the early saints were warrior saints, right? Saint Demetrius, Saint George, these were Roman officers who then transitioned into holy professions and preaching the word of Christ. And even if you don't believe Christianity is true, I think you benefit a lot from other people believing it's true. The kindness you get from people who are truly following the name. I know a lot of times we look at Christians and sometimes like they're the most obnoxious people, but they hopefully are working on themselves. And you know, I'm far from perfect. I'm obviously working on myself as well. And in some aspects, this obviously forces my hand because now I have to be even better, better behave than I've ever been. And I do think martial arts and learning a new skill, mastering a complex skill, give you discipline, and that discipline can apply to other aspects of your life, such as walking away from fights, being a nicer person, doing what's right, all that kind of, I think they all feed into each. I think discipline, whether it be for martial arts, for obstacle course racing, for fitness, you can apply it to faith and then into daily life, which makes kind of everyone nicer. Just out of, I also kind of grappled with the question, you know, before I made this decision, I was like, well, what if I go 30 years, right? I get spend 4 years in seminary, go be a priest for 20, 30 years. And 30 years, I decide that new evidence comes out, whatever that may be, or I find new evidence. And I'm like, well, Orthodox Christianity is not the correct place. I've thought about that too. And the conclusion I came to was, if I spend the next 30 years doing this, will I have made a positive impact? Even if I, let's say I for some reason, something new comes out and it's like, that's completely not true. Will I have made a positive impact? And the answer is yes. I believe that the answer is yes. So like I said, I think everyone benefits from the values of Christianity. And this is my way of helping and giving back. And I look at some of the stuff my family has done, my extended family has done. And I think it's a worthy path to go on that continues to help people, promotes the truth, and makes the world a better place. Okay, I think that's it. I've run this 50 minutes. I always surprised how long I talk for when I do these things. But that's a quick rundown of fitness, faith, or fitness, fighting, and faith. Again, please check out the Team Strength Speed website, teamstrengthspeed.com. All the books are up on there. Watch out for the new Tiga Tactics, Run If You Can, Destroy If You Must book about runner self-protection coming out. Got links to train with Tiga Tactics. Got links for the Tiga Tactics podcast, especially the Kind by Choice episode down below. Links for all our supporting sponsors, The Feed, Yoked, Mud Gear. Going to drop all those down below along with coupon codes if you want to save some money. If anyone has any questions on fighting or Orthodox Christianity, I try to respond to all the messages. If I don't respond typically in 24 hours, your messages have probably ended up in my spam folder or I forgot about it. So feel free to hit me up again. If anyone has any questions, wants to train with me on any of the martial arts type stuff or Christianity, like I said, hit me up. And then this Saturday, May 3rd, or is it the 4th? Whatever day it is, this Saturday, May 4th. There we go. Again, if you ever wanted to check out what Orthodox Christianity is like in a service, find any Orthodox church, 11 p.m. That's Saturday night. Head to the church. You'll probably have to buy a candle. It'll be like $2 to $5 when you walk in. And then you get to see the spreading of the light, which is just a really cool experience. The whole church goes pitch black. They shut off all the lights. And the priest emerges from behind the altar with a lit candle. And then it spreads throughout the church. And then you sing Christ is Risen. A lot of times the whole congregation will go outside and they ring this giant bell. And the whole neighborhood's like, what is going on? And you do the sign of the cross with the lights. And again, this is pulled from, if we look at the Church of the Resurrection, right where Jesus was crucified and where his tomb was, it's in Jerusalem. It's generally accepted as that is factually the correct place. If you look at the branch of Christianity that has control over that site, it is Orthodox Christianity. So on Saturday night in Jerusalem, they will enter Christ's tomb and he will come out with a lit candle. He'll enter with an unlit candle, come out with a lit candle, and it spreads throughout the church. So the Church of Resurrection in Jerusalem. Pretty cool. You can find videos of that online, but if you want to experience a kind of like a mini version of it, just find an Orthodox church in your area and stop by and visit. All right, that's it for now. Thank you for letting me run my mouth. We'll get back to some normal guests for the next episode, and we'll start deep diving into some more obstacle course racing stuff. I just did Myrtle Creek Mud Run. I just did Hazelwood OCR The Mosh, and I'm about to do KC Timber Challenge. So I'm going to talk about those three events on an upcoming episode. And then we've got some more guests coming on. 3GX Mental Training, if you're Sarah Grippy Snyder, one of the new Mud Gear Hannibal Race pros, she's going to come on, talk a little bit about mental training and some of the exercises in her workbook that she has available. I'm going to bring on some of the other Mud Gear Hannibal Race pros. If you're going to be at Toughest Mudder East in Philly, I will be there. That should be podium 100. So that'll be a big event for me. And kind of mark the start of my semi-retirement. I also have some giveaway stuff there. I think I got some hats and some books and some other stuff I'm going to bring. So we'll see how much my luggage weighs, how much I can carry there. But a bunch of stuff I'm just trying to get rid of. I don't need anything from you. Just swing by, say congratulations, ask if I've got something for you, and you can see what kind of stuff I got in my goodie bag that you can completely have for free. Don't need anything from you. Just enjoy the celebration. And we will see you out on the race course.